The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show on this Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2012. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Don Kazarian, the promoter of the Paris Auto Speedway, and longtime public relations director and one of the owners of the United Racing Company, Bob Miller. That's all coming up next on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Rod N Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Well, welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We're going to head on out to the West Coast and talk a little non-wing sprint car action with the promoter of the Paris Auto Speedway, Mr. Don Kazarian. Don, it's a pleasure to have you on. It's the first time caller here on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
In talking with your great announcer and a real great guy in this industry, Scott Delosio, he was pretty adamant in our chat on Facebook that you are a hands-on promoter, everything from prepping the track to even scrubbing the toilets. How did you, over the years in your partnership with your brothers, how did you develop the style to be a hands-on promoter, and how do you see that that has been a big part of the success that you guys have had at Paris Auto Speedway?
Well, you might call me the last man standing. You know, as you know or noted, yeah, I did have three brothers that we started the venture off 17 years ago, and one of them was kind of a passive partner. He was basically the financial end of it and did the books, and the other two were intimately involved in the racetrack. But through the years, they lost interest, and one day I woke up and found myself basically there by myself, and I became, you know, not only the guy that did the track prep, which was my first job, then I became the sound engineer, and then as times got tougher and tougher, I became the janitor, I became the electrician, I became the plumber, and, you know, that's the sign of the times right now. In order to survive, you've got to basically manage your costs and you know, promote at the same time, and it's been tough, and it's been tough for about the last 4 to 5 years.
Has a lot of that toughness, Don, been due all to the economy, or are we in a changing landscape? We're back in the days when your family had the cars that Bubby Jones piloted to the 83 and 84 CRA championship. There wasn't a lot of, the internet wasn't around, and there weren't online simulators for people to run. Is it a lot with the economy, or is there just so much more entertainment than there was today back in the 80s that has made it a challenge for track promoters to survive?
I think it's a combination of many factors. The economy, of course, was a big factor, but there are just so many different factors that, you know, when you go back to the Ascot days, you know, JC was the absolute premier promoter. You know, he didn't do anything that promoters do today. Today, you know, you have an X number of dollars of budget to spend on advertising. Years ago, you know, all the local newspapers worked with you. They created the heroes. There are no local newspapers covering the sport anymore. You know, now you've got the internet. Now you've got, instead of 13 channels when I grew up and watched Ascot on Channel 5. You have 145 channels. You've got satellite radio. You know, it's just there's so much content out there that for a promoter to look at one thing and say, I'm going to do this, and it's going to bring people in my front gates. For 17 years, I haven't been able to find that one item. And trust me, we've tried everything that you can in the advertising end of it. So in some sense, promoters have become operators, and the ones that are good and can control their costs, you know, can survive. We've lost a generation of younger people that haven't followed the dirt tracks. You know, they've gotten into extreme sports, and whether it's freestyle motocross or X Games in the wintertime, you know, it's tough to pull the young kids in, and it's been really tough, and NASCAR's seeing it, and that's why they're getting a lot of the younger guys coming out, and they're trying to promote the much younger guys that are coming out of the X Games.
We were talking just before we came on the air here. You were actually watching a monster truck race on cable television. As a promoter, do you have an opportunity from time to time to not only take in a race like that, but look to see what they're doing that you maybe not have tried before? Do you talk with other promoters? How have times changed in the 17 years that you've been promoting non-wing sprint car racing at Paris to the point where you're trying to find everything you can do to keep the track going?
You know, I'm first of all, I'm a NASCAR radio junkie. I get my truck every morning, it's on. I've gotten to the point where I can broadcast it out of our tower, and I can put my earplugs in while I'm operating equipment. I mean, listening to that radio show from morning to noon gives you a pulse of what the fan base is thinking and what they're talking about. And I try and follow what NASCAR is doing. I mean, they're the cream of the crop. To be honest with you, tonight's probably the first monster truck show I've watched, but I was just streaming through the channels, and I clicked it on just to see what they're doing, because, you know, we do run monster trucks during the fair, and, you know, and they've gone, you know, an extra, you know, mile as far as even prepping the arenas. I know they're painting their jumps, you know, you look at stuff like that. I watch Supercross because, you know, they've got a much younger demographic, and you watch their show production, you know, whether it's flamethrowers and all the girls and everything else, you know, but, you know, and that's bringing the younger generation in, and I think that's something that we as promoters have to look at doing.
Do you see at Paris any signs that the younger generation is starting to come back, or is it the mainstream regular hardcore racers that are there when you guys do race, since you don't race on every weekend basis?
You know, two, 3 years ago, we got into the off-road side of the marketplace, and we had actually three pretty large shows there. Two of the Torque Series races, which exposed the track to that younger demographic. And we're seeing a lot of those kids now showing up at the sprint car races. We're seeing them not only showing up as fans, but we're seeing them coming up as competitors. Kids that were driving trophy carts 3 years ago are now breaking into sprint cars. So, you know, I think that helped a bit and helped expose the facility to a younger generation. But we're slowly starting to pick up younger kids.
Well, that's good news to hear. We're talking with Don Kazarian, the promoter of Paris Auto Speedway out there just east of Los Angeles. And, of course, over the weekend, the news broke that Arundel Speedway, 60 miles from you folks, has shut down permanently. Your thoughts and reaction to what that means to the racing community in Southern California?
You know, we've not only lost Arundel, we lost the Orange Show after, I think, what, 64 years. Up at Victorville, they're searching for a promoter. So, I mean, we've lost three major tracks in this region. Irwindale was a surprise. I mean, that was the class of all facilities out here, maybe the class of facilities in the United States. You know, I've always envied them. They were 60 miles west of us. I always thought, boy, if we just had this dirt track where Irwindale was, it'd be much better. But, you know, even they couldn't survive under the economy right now. I don't know enough to know the ins and outs, but I do know, you know, they had a tremendous overhead there, and maybe they couldn't cut it enough to survive. And, you know, as Jim Williams, you know, any owner that can't produce a profit you know, after 15, 16 years, you've got to have enough. I don't care how much money you've got.
You were talking before about when the family had the racing car and you're racing at Ascot. You're watching Ascot on television. J.C. Agajanian, one of the greats in the promoting business. What were some of the things that he did back in the day that maybe you don't see that anybody else is doing these days? That can you bring something back that he had that was successful that could be a benefit to the fans and to the racers there at Paris Auto Speedway?
You know, it wasn't unusual at Ascot where you'd see some of the Hollywood celebrities there, you know, and they'd parade them around. You know, back then people wanted to be seen. You know, today when if we have a celebrity come out, years ago Paul Newman would come out, but he would only come out in one request that we didn't announce that he was there. And same thing, you know, if Tony comes out, Stewart comes out, we make sure that we're not exposing him to the crowd. So, you know, in today's environment, to have the celebrities out there and not wanting to be seen doesn't really help. But I can remember almost every sprint car race, there was a celebrity, you know, on the front straightaway while the cars were lined up. And it added something, you know, it was a value added to the fans. And it was something that the fans wanted to be there to see who was going to show up that night. You know, we don't have celebrities coming out. We've invited them, but, you know, we're 60 miles east of downtown L.A., and that's pretty far long haul for somebody to come out for the evening.
And even not having to wait in line to get the world-famous pink hot dogs hasn't worked for a celebrity then, I take it.
No, we've had the pink hot dogs out there for years, and, you know, that hasn't been a draw. So.
Now, you have the World of Outlaws coming this year, but also you have, instead of a three-day show, a two-day show for the Oval Nationals. Talk about having the Outlaws back at Paris Auto Speedway, and what are some of the reasons behind the Oval Nationals going to a two-day format?
First of all, I mean, we're pleased to have the Outlaws come back. We haven't had them since 2007. It's very prestigious to have them run at the Speedway. We're looking forward to having them come back. Napa came on board as a presenting sponsor, and you know, to be honest with you, they made me an offer that I really couldn't refuse, and it's basically a joint venture, and I think it's going to be a heck of a show. And you know, they're helping promote it on the front side. That was something that the track struggled with in February and March, you know, because odds are we were going to have a rainout, and you know, we weren't in a financial position to spend a lot of money on advertising up front. So they're helping us with that, and I think it's going to be a great show. The Oval Nationals, let's see, we've tried, you know, for 16 years, or actually let's go back even 8 years when it became a USAC race. We've always tried to promote it as a three-day show, thus producing a little more drama. And the racers worked with us, and USAC worked with us, as far as the racetrack was concerned, because our Thursday and Friday night crowds were not, you know, big enough to pay a huge purse. And this last year was kind of the last straw. We had weather on Friday night, and we ran two shows on Saturday. And USAC came back to me after the event and basically said, you know, this is the type of purse we need to run for on weeknights. And, you know, you're paying a great purse on Saturday night, but Friday and Thursday nights a little light, so can we raise the purse to both nights? And you know, as a promoter, I looked at it and looked at my business model and said, no, I can't pay that type of purse both nights, so let's go to a two-day show. And literally we're taking a little money out of Saturday night and putting it into Friday night, and we'll be paying a good purse and the standard purse that the national guys are used to running for, and so we've cut it back to a two-day show.
You had to raise prices this year for admission, $25 now for adult. And I guess over the years covering motorsports, I forget what it's like to have to pay to get in, because we are in as guests to go there and do what we do to help promote the event at whatever venue it is. How difficult of a decision was it for you to have to sit back and say, yes, you have to raise the prices in order to keep going with your business model?
Yeah, at the end of the year, we sit down and we produce our schedule, and we go through an economic model on every event, and then we roll it up into an annual budget. You know, after doing this for 16 years, you get pretty good at it. the major revenue items, of course, are ticket sales and backgate ticket or pit pass sales, and then the biggest major item is sponsorship. And sponsorship dollars have dried up in the last 3 years, significantly. And when I projected this year out versus last year, based on some assumptions, knowing what some sponsors had told me and some preliminary meetings, you know, there was a big gaping hole in the bottom line. And another reason, you know, USAC last year helped subsidize the purses that was paid to Paris. They came back to me because our 2010 season was so disastrous. They came back to me and said, tell us what you can afford to pay for our shows and we'll subsidize the difference. So we worked out an agreement and we were hoping to do that for 2 years, you know, and carry it through 2012 and allow the racetrack to get up on its feet. But at the end of the year, I talked with Kevin Miller and we had a gentleman's agreement that they couldn't subsidize the races in 2012 like they did in 2011. So by the time I got done playing with my economic models, you know, the last resort was to raise the front gate, which was the last decision that I wanted to make, because, you know, I know all the race fans are hurting, and, you know, a $5 increase to some people isn't a whole lot. Well, $5 is a whole lot to me, and I hope the fans accept it, and I hope they embrace it, and I hope they show up in droves and keep the racetrack alive.
What kind of response did you get when you talked to the sponsors when they were saying what they were going to be able to do this year compared to what they were able to do in the past? Did you get any sense that this might be something that may be a short-term deal where they had to pull back, or is this going to be something that may be dragged out based on what happens with the economy as we move on down the road?
You know, if I knew that, I'd be in Vegas. I'm hoping it's a short-term, but, you know, it's been declining significantly over the last 3 years. You know, a lot of sponsors have hung in there with us, but, you know, they come back and basically say, I can't give you, pull a number out of a hat. I can't give you 10,000, but I can give you 4,000. Well, as a racetrack promoter, you're going to take the 4,000 and give them what you gave them when they used to give you 10,000. But the numbers keep ratcheting down, and it's tough. You know, I've only said probably to two sponsors in the last 3 years, I can't do what you want me to do for that money. You know, so, you know, you're just basically in a catch-22, right? And the race teams are in the same boat, you know. Sponsorship dollars used to represent about 20% of our annual revenue. Today, it's basically about 5%. So you take that 15% out, which is a pretty big, significant number, and it leaves a big gaping hole. And that's one of the reasons why we chose to cut our races back from basically 45 events to last year. We ran 22 events, and this year right now we currently have 27 events scheduled.
And, of course, the Lidlifter is coming up on February the 25th at the Paris Auto Speedway. You can learn more about the Speedway online at parisautospeedway.com. Don, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Before we let you go, one final thing. Last year you guys did do some live video streams, and there was a pay-per-view that you did. Is that returning for this year, for the season, or how is that going to work?
Yeah, I'm just finishing up an agreement with the three-wide live networks with Henry Clark Sr., and he's trying to go out and put basically 10 tracks together under this new network scheme. And I think he's going to be successful with it. I know he's gotten all the licensing rights to broadcast all the USAC races across the nation, and he's trying to put, like I said, 8 or 10 of the tracks together. So, you know, look for an announcement probably in the next week, but I know come February 25th, we will be up live with pay-per-view out of Paris Auto Speedway. And, you know, that was a nice little project last year, and I got to really thank Henry Clark Sr., because he was the one that spearheaded that whole package, and, you know, it turned out very successful for the year.
Well, Don, sounds like things are going to get turned around for you there in the near future, and we do hope things continue forward for Paris Auto Speedway, and we look forward to getting out there at some point and taking the action in person.
Well, I appreciate the phone call, and to all the fans, we're looking forward to seeing you on February 25th. We had our first open practice this last Saturday night. We had an absolutely full pit. We had, I think, 72 race cars in the facility and probably 500 fans sitting in the grandstand and watching practice. So that tells, if that's any indicator, I'm extremely optimistic, and I think 2012 is going to be a great season.
Well, Mike Spencer's the defending track champion. We'll see if he can hold on to that track championship, or will it be a new name at the top of the list come the end, or I should say the early part of November. Don Kazarian, thanks again. We appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you at some point down the road here on the Sprint Car Show.
Thank you very much.
Don Kazarian, the promoter from the Paris Auto Speedway, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and come back with more right after this. At Rod End Supply, they have the unique opportunity to be involved with all sorts of auto racing and performance-related industries, including farming equipment. Whether you're running a go-kart, micro sprint, midget, modified, late model, sprint car, or a tractor, Rod End Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performing at your maximum potential. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively with prompt and courteous service. Their promise is to continue to provide superior service with superior products that will keep you in front of your field. To learn more, log on to rodendsupply.com or call Bob Douglas and his staff at 1-800-284-2902. That's 1-800-284-2902. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We bring in our longtime and good friend, Bob Miller. Many of you know he's the longtime public relations director for the United Racing Company. He's also an owner, along with John and Cher Zimmerman, of the oldest touring sprint car series here in the U.S. Bob, pleasure to talk with you today. Thanks for taking time out to join us here on the Sprint Car Show.
Well, I'd like to start by thanking you and your listeners. And, you know, it's very important to racing to have opportunities like this so we can communicate with the media and the race fans. So thank you, Sean.
Sure thing, Bob. Well, Bob, the URC season is not too far from getting the lid lifter going. And some interesting news coming out just a few days ago. You folks are going to allow 358 sprint cars to run this season. Talk about the decision to make that happen, and how are they going to fit into the future business model with URC?
Well, no, you're absolutely right, Sean. And, you know, this has actually been a journey. About 5 or 6 years ago, you know, teaming up with Charlie Page at Sealands Grove Speedway, we have been running combination shows, you know, for the 358 and 360s, you know, numerous challenge events that have kind of, you know, moved over to the Williams Grove Speedway as well, and Lincoln Speedway. So it seemed like it's a real good match. I mean, I think initially everybody was very hesitant to do it because no one knew how close or how far apart these cars were. But once we got them on the track and have run, you know, anywhere from, you know, 15 to 25 challenge events, you know, we're finding that the cars are fairly equal. And as a result, we've had a lot of interest from the 358 drivers. Now, you know, I'm not saying drivers like Blaine Heimbach or Pat Cannon, drivers that are locked into their weekly Saturday night track, but, you know, a driver like a Todd Rittenhouse, who is from the Philadelphia area, that might want to run a New Egypt or a Bridgeport show, or a Kevin Nagy, another driver from New Jersey, who might want to on a Saturday night go to a New Jersey or Delaware event. So we really look at it, not that we're targeting to bring 358 sprint cars in mass numbers to URC, but it's a way to open the door that drivers who do have 358 can come and run with us, see our attractive payoff, our lucrative point fund, the loyalty funds that we pay out over the course of the season, and hopefully that's our way of enticing drivers to come and run with us. So, again, to be clear, the decision to allow 358, you know, was not targeted to draw Pat Cannon or Blaine Heimbach necessarily to URC. They'd certainly be welcome, but to give other drivers an opportunity to kind of feel and sense the URC experience.
Well, interesting point there, Bob, because just recently the Mark Smith and the folks at Mach 1 Chassis announcing the 360 series of races, one at Lincoln, majority at Sealands Grove. And I want to get your thoughts as to what would happen and how would URC be affected if the day were ever to come that 358 racing here in Pennsylvania was phased out, since it's the only place in the country where 358s run, and 360s were to replace them. What would be the repercussions on URC if that were ever to take place?
Right. Well, to kind of kick that discussion off, you know, we do work with Brian Scandal and what he's doing. We trust that what he's doing is to elevate 360 sprint car racing. You know, we the show at Lincoln that I'm going to be doing there with the ROC Modifies is the Brian Scandal 360-358 Challenge. So we do have that working relationship. Brian also sponsors some URC races during the course of the year. So I find any time we can elevate the purse, for whatever division it is, any time you can elevate the purse and get the drivers you know, a better payoff, that's a good thing. I do believe that there's room for both to exist, URC still being a traveling series, where what Brian is doing would be, you know, trying to get 360s, you know, more grounded in the central Pennsylvania area. So, again, URC would still be touring and still align with some of these special events in central PA. So, again, anytime I think you can elevate the purse for the drivers, that's a good thing. I only hope that drivers do look at purse and make their decisions on where they race based off of that, or, you know, they will continue to run for lower payouts.
And if I'm not mistaken, Bob, on a regular basis, you guys are the highest paying 360 touring series in the country in terms of winner's share and the overall payout for the year. Is that correct still?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, we do pay $2,000 to win and $200 to take the green. But beyond that, that's the nightly payoff. But, you know, last year we paid out two increments totaling, in total, $15,000. In addition to that nightly payoff, we paid out $15,000 to owners who competed in six out of nine shows. Again, trying to help these teams along the way during the course of the season. And then had a $50,000 point fund that was paid out as well. You know, this year we have very similar bonus money, and we have a $159 right rear tire. You know, almost unheard of in sprint car racing today. And what we've done is negotiated some of that sponsorship money to lower the tire prices. Again, I just think in the tight economic times that we're facing, making these guys wait till the end of the year to get their point fund money really doesn't help. Where if we can be helping them out across the entire season, that should keep more cars running with URC.
And, of course, you're using American Racer tires. Are all four tires required to be American Racers?
That is the requirement on a weekly basis. However, for a driver who comes and runs for the first time, he'd just be required to have American Racers on the left and right rear. And for some of the challenge races, we've made some concessions, you know, to work through that. It's a little bit of a give and take to, you know, to get everybody to work together.
We're talking with Bob Miller from the United Racing Company, the longtime PR director for the company, and now one of the owners of URC, along with John and Cher Zimmerman. 21 dates on the calendar this year, Bob. I recall back in the days when my dad and I would head to Flemington on Labor Day night and watch the URC sprint cars. Of course, back then there was no front wing, a very small top wing, and it seemed as though Glenn Fitzcharles usually dominated back in the days of Flemington. The schedule has been down over the years. Is that part of the economy, or is that part of the evolvement of, you have ESS, which has been around for 26 years, I believe, now, and now you have the Patriot Sprint Tour, which was a byproduct of the American Sprint Car Series. Can you address the scheduling of 21 dates this year compared to back in the heyday of URC and the Glenn Fitzcharles and Freddie Berger and all those great guys back in the day?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I mean, again, I'm not one who looks for conflict and would rather, you know, try to find out a working relationship, just like we do with Brian Scandal or we did with Charlie Page, you know, with the Jack Gunn Memorial. The same could be said for ESS and the Patriot Sprint Group. We've run over 25 combination events between URC and the New York-based groups. I'd say we have probably a little bit better working relationship with ESS just because they've been around longer. But what's interesting is when we have in the past gone to New York to race and the three organizations are together, URC is asked to lead it to avoid the conflict of three groups, since we do have a good working relationship with both the Patriots and ESS. So I don't think ESS or the Patriots have hurt us. We probably have less shows in New York because of that, and that's understandable. But, you know, in the scope of things with the economy and travel, you know, we've made less effort at trying to book shows in New York or the Carolinas, or even took our Canadian dates off just because of, you know, the rising cost of travel. What we wanted to try to do for URC is to give them a 20 to 30 race schedule that was local, you know, within a 4-hour drive. And that all worked well until we saw the demise or the go away of Flemington and, you know, the sometimes up and down history of Bridgeport Speedway. And actually what's happened at Delaware, I'll just speak very openly about it. Here's a track where at one time we had as many as 10 races in one season, and we're only going to see three stops there on the 2012 schedule. I mean, it's just a true fact of oversaturation that we ran there so often that after some time we weren't special anymore. So in working with Charlie Cassell, while we hate to see the number of events go down, you know, it's a compromise to stay in at that track and hopefully starve the people for it, that they come out in larger numbers again, and you see those number of race dates go up. So I think it's a combination of the economy. Yes, it's a combination of the ESS and Patriot Sprint Group getting a stronger hold on New York. You know, it's the rising cost of fuel, but quite honestly, we've controlled a lot of this. If we really wanted to be aggressive and go after dates outside of our area, we could. I'm just not sure right now is the time to do that, you know, for our competitors. And while we'd like to see 26 or 28 races, most of the folks who I've talked to personally are pretty happy with the 21 race schedule. You know, we've got to think of the middle of the pack driver who looks at the number of motor rebuilds and tires and fuel costs over the course of the year. A lot of guys have said, you know what, Bob, I can make 21 races. And those drivers who do want to run a 30 race schedule will have the opportunity and options to go and run some shows in New York or to run the Brian Scandal events or, you know, go do whatever else they'd like to do. So I think we're doing the right thing for the organization and the core number of members that we have.
I know you guys are going to be heading out, of course, our way to Sealands Grove. You'll be at Big Diamond, Williams Grove, Port Royal. Do you see in the future maybe a little bit more of an expansion westward to tracks like Lernerville or Pittsburgh, Sharon or Mercer? Could that be something, if the economy comes back, that you may take a look at down the road, maybe, say, get a 25-date schedule at some point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think next year we'll be back up to 25. I would think next year we'll keep the dates we have, and we'll see another two come in at Delaware, possibly three. I think we'll see another two shows come in at New Egypt. And Bridgeport right now, that is inked at just one date, and historically in the past has taken anywhere from 5 to 8 shows a year, I think you'll see them back up to 4. But, you know, with Doug Hoffman going in as a new promoter at Bridgeport, and I've talked to him about this, I never tried to sell Doug on 4 or 5 URC shows. You know, it was, let's get one. He needs to see how good it'll do for him from a crowd perspective. It's a learning year for Doug as well. You know, we got to work with the promoters for them to be successful. You know, we're not in these heydays that we all remember from the 80s or 90s, and everybody's got to walk before they run. So I'm optimistic that you'll see the number of shows come up. And as far as going to tracks like Lernerville, Mercer, we've been at Mercer before. Yeah, I see that as a very strong possibility. But right now, you know, we just really need to watch. You know, we tested this year. We have a Friday night show at Potomac and a Saturday at Winchester, Virginia. So two stops, you know, new for us. We haven't been at either track for some time. So, you know, that's always good to see two new tracks come on the schedule.
And, Bob, you're also introducing some new rules for 2013 with flat wings and a 1,500-pound weight limit on the cars. What do you think that's going to do for the overall competition, and how will that make racing better for the fans who do come out and watch URC throughout the year?
You know, I don't think those two will necessarily have a big impact on quality of racing. Again, I think what we're trying to do is take a little bit of that downforce off, you know, so that we're not tearing up drive lines, less wear on motors, and to try to save the tires. So the combination of the weight, you know, and the flat wing, you know, the flat wing may loosen or slow the cars up a little bit, but I think it's going to do the same to every car in the track. I think the biggest change that we're going to have is going to the double file restarts, and I really think you're going to see more passing. You know, we got to admit that if we look at the last 2 or 3 years, most of URC's nightly feature winners came from the front row. And our top drivers who are starting 11th or 12th, it is really hard for them, especially once they go single file, you know, to reel in that leader. You know, we start seeing cautions after halfway or down to 5 to go. You know, we're doubling those cars up. And fans know they're going to see some passing those last 5 laps.
So with 5 laps to go and the caution comes out, you'll have a double file restart?
Double file restart and lap cars will go to the rear. We will offer one lucky dog, so the first car or the most recent car to be lapped would then unlap, go around to the back of the field, and still be, you know, on the lead lap.
Well, it definitely sounds like there are some exciting times ahead for United Racing Company. Of course, folks, you can check them out in person on their season opener, April the 28th at Delaware, or online at urcsprints.com. Bob, always a pleasure to talk with you, and we can't forget you have the Thunder on the Hill series coming up as well at the Grandview Speedway, wingless sprints with USAC, ARDC Midgets, ROC Modifieds, the 410s with the Pennsylvania Sprint Car Speed Week. It's going to be another great year of action for you guys from at Thunder on the Hill.
Well, we really enjoy doing it, and I greatly enjoy working with the different divisions. You know, expanding to do the 410 show with the Sammons family at New Egypt. It really is rewarding and challenging at the same time. And again, I've got to thank the media folks, people like yourself, and all the race fans who support these events.
And Bob, the date for the 360 and Big Block show at Lincoln, what date will that be this year?
That is Tuesday night, June 20th. And again, a 60-lap ROC Big Block Modified show, joined by one of the Brian Scandal 360, 358 Sprint Car Series events. So that's Tuesday, June 20th at Lincoln.
And folks, it was a heck of a great show last year. I'm sure it's going to be a great show this year. We were down and covered it, and it was a great time. Bob, as always, thanks so much for taking time out to join us here on the Sprint Car Show. We look forward to seeing you at the track and look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Thank you, Sean.
Bob Miller, longtime public relations director for the United Racing Company and owner, along with John and Cher Zimmerman, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and come back with news and notes right after this. The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, Shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show, everybody. Special thanks to our guest, Don Kazarian from the Paris Auto Speedway and longtime public relations director and one of the owners of the United Racing Company, Bob Miller. The racing season is now officially underway. Last weekend, USAC getting in 2 out of 3 dates, losing 1 to rain, as Damian Gardner won the lid lifter for the USAC non-wing sprint cars, and Darren Hagan also picking up a win. Heading into the next USAC race, April the 14th at the Lawrenceburg Speedway in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, Brian Clausen holds a 5-point lead over the Demon. Darren Pittman and Tony Stewart picked up wins with the All-Star Circuit of Champions as they opened up their season, and Pittman holds a 6-point lead over David Gravel in the early goings. Wednesday through Thursday, the All-Stars will be at Volusia. Also at Volusia, starting on the 17th through the 19th, is the 41st Dirt Car Nationals. The World of Outlaws will kick off their season on the 17th. And as we have been telling you about the last few weeks, next week it is our Pennsylvania Sprint Car Preview Show, as Lincoln Speedway will have their 30-lap icebreaker coming up at 2 o'clock on Saturday, February the 25th. Other dates in central Pennsylvania for the openers include the 410s at Sewan's Grove on March 11th, March 23rd is the opener for Williams Grove Speedway, and March 17th, the opener for the Port Royal Speedway. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. We greatly appreciate it. And again, we look forward to talking to you next week on the 21st of February with our Pennsylvania Sprint Car Preview. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, and Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood. Have yourselves a great Valentine's Day.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.